Well, dude, thank you so much for coming in. For context, we put up a question box in the Instagram when we were announced we launched a podcast, a story you put up in this room. And we said, all right, anyone have ideas, stories we should cover, people we should talk to, anything like that? And we got a bunch of great recommendations, a lot of guests we reached out to. And then there was one comment that caught our eye, and it was you. You have a story to share, and we'd love to hear a little bit about it.
Yeah, definitely. And I appreciate you guys having me on here. And candidly, when I sent that in, it was serious, but it was also like partially a joke, yeah, because my friends make fun of me because they've all heard this story a million times, just because it is, like you said, it's really unexpected for somebody my age. But essentially what happened is, and I'll go into this, of course, in more detail, but I was running on the treadmill when I was 21 and went into cardiac arrest. So kind of giving you the whole picture, I mean, throughout my whole high school, college career, even into now, I've always definitely been really into exercising, really into fitness, eating healthy, working out, you know, 5-6 days a week. So it was 2 days before my last exam, senior year at Ohio State, and I was running on the treadmill, third floor, middle treadmill in the new gym, the North Rack on campus, and felt totally fine. I was almost done with my run. I just had been studying all day. It's a normal day. Not doing no funny business before, had like half a cup of coffee. And I, all of a sudden, I just try to breathe in and I just go, I was like, oh man, like something felt wrong. I was like, maybe I stepped wrong and knocked the wind out of myself. I mean, your first thought isn't, oh, I'm having a cardiac arrest. So I try to breathe in again, but it was like I was underwater. I mean, nothing would come in. And at that moment, and this is all probably happened within like 3 to 5 seconds. At that moment, I was like, oh no, something is definitely wrong here. And I started getting tunnel vision. I felt like I was getting crushed. And then I kind of tried to turn down the treadmill and I lost all feeling in my body because my heart wasn't beating anymore. And then it's kind of hard to explain, but when you're dying, you can kind of tell that you're dying. And it really lasts about a second or two. My experience was a couple seconds, but it felt like forever. And then the last thing I remember is I fell and I hit my head, and that is all I remember for a few days. So luckily, I didn't even know this, but one of my friends who lives right down the street from me, and I still see him, you know, a couple times a week, was working out at the gym, and he didn't know. I didn't know that he was there. And he saw me fall off the treadmill and he came over to make fun of me, actually, because I fell off the treadmill earlier that year because I tripped on my shoelaces. He's like, oh, Colgan tripped on his shoelaces again. So he comes over and flips me over and I am not breathing. The eyes are in the back of my head. And so that's when he thought, this guy didn't just trip on his shoelaces. Something's going on. So he called 911. And then the students kind of just around me at the gym walked down and told the first floor desk that a student passed out upstairs. And I think they kind of didn't really think too much of it at the time, but they just kind of like walked up, took my pulse, didn't have a pulse, tried it again, still didn't have a pulse.
And that's like zero pulse.
Yeah, zero pulse, like completely. I had no heart, my heart wasn't beating. I had no brain function. I was like legally dead. So then they went down and got the AED, attached it to me. It applied a shock, and they said it's like in the movies when someone gets defibrillated and their whole like chest kind of bounces up like that. So it shocks you, and I don't know how much you know about AEDs, but they're really intuitive and they just tell you exactly what to do. So it shocked me, and then it actually says out loud, apply 10 more compressions. So they did that, and then I kind of sat up and was awake again. But I would say kind of the most interesting part of that story is my friend, Danielle, was supposed to be working at the gym that day, but it was the last week of senior year. So she called off, thankfully, to go to the bars, because I think that if she was there, she would have been like, all right, you're faking it. Get up, bro. Is messing with
me. Yeah.
But luckily, Karen David, who was a student, who used to train everybody throughout all of the gyms at Ohio State, picked up her shift. And just happened to be there that day. And I don't know if any other student would have been able to actually successfully give me CPR and use an AED if Karen wasn't there that day. So that was very, very lucky. My mom likes to remind me of that a lot, for sure, just how fortunate I am. But anyway, after that whole ordeal, woke up, still don't remember anything for a few days after that, just because I essentially was dead for too long. So I had some like short-term memory loss for a few days, because I think it was about 5 to 7 minutes is how long they estimate that I was actually out for. But luckily I have no long-term brain damage, because they were able to give me CPR pretty soon after I actually went into cardiac arrest. But spent the week in the hospital at Ohio State, did a ton of tests, couldn't really figure out what the problem was. My doctor, I like him, he's a no BS kind of guy. So he goes, this is word for word what he said. He goes, I'm going to be honest, I don't know what happened to you. If anyone else knows what claims they know what happens to you, they're guessing. What probably happened is you pissed out too much potassium and had one bad heartbeat and went into cardiac arrest. And that is word for what he said. And he said it happens, you know, about 15% of the time. They can't really figure out the underlying reason when this happens in young people. So I got a nifty internal defibrillator placed in my chest here that is kind of a fail safe, and luckily it hasn't had to shock me since. But I'm just really lucky to be here, because the survival rate's about 10.6% for that.
Oh my goodness. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is just stunning.
That's incredible.
So yeah. 7 minutes, how long can you be out and still revive?
So I might butcher this a little bit. I forget the exact statistic, but it's after a couple of minutes, your brain starts to take damage.
Uh-huh.
Unless you're receiving CPR, that elongates it quite a bit. So I think if I wasn't receiving CPR, I definitely would have some kind of brain damage. But luckily, since Karen was there, they really saved my life and saved my brain function too.
That's insane.
So you said that when you're dying, you know that you're dying. Mm-hmm. What did that feel like?
So that's a question I get a lot, and I think I'm able to answer most questions, but that's one that I still can't really put into words. It was only a second or two, but I just remember thinking like this is it. I can't breathe. I can't like move my body at all.
Is it fear? Is it peace? What do you have in that moment?
In that moment, I definitely had fear and a lot of pain. That it was the most painful thing I hope I ever have to go through, because it really felt like I was getting crushed essentially, and I just like lost all feeling in my body and couldn't breathe. So at that moment, it was fear.
This might sound dumb, but is it more painful than you expected?
Oh my God, yeah. Yeah. And that's not really something I'd considered before, like what it would feel right. like to have cardiac arrest, but it's unlike anything I could ever explain. It's, yeah, incredibly painful.
Now, and also just to put this on the record, this happened 2018.
Yep. April 25th, 2018.
Because otherwise you have a bunch of people in the comments dropping the vax emoji.
Yeah. No, it's pre-vax, yeah.
A lot of people, when they die temporarily, mm-hmm. as you did, they share some sort of maybe spiritual experience of any sort, whether at the moment you realized you were dying or when you were out, even though you lost memory, or did you have any experience like that?
So I'll answer that with another story. So when I was, this is somewhat related. When I was 16, I actually had a seizure, and that's because I was smoking weed. And at the time I was told, I like went to the hospital and everything. And at the time I was told that I was allergic to it, which is possible. You can be allergic to anything. But looking back on it, it's just because my heart like kind of can't handle a lot of substances, I guess. So obviously since then, I have not touched that or any
other. Was it your first time smoking weed?
It was maybe like my third time smoking, yeah. But yeah, since then, I definitely have a bit of an aversion to marijuana or any other kind of drug. But it actually felt similar to the heart attack or to the cardiac arrest, but not quite as intense and kind of more drawn out. So what happened is I went into ventricular tachycardia, and it's kind of like a precursor to cardiac arrest, but you can kind of snap out of it. So I ended up having a seizure, but while I was waking up from the seizure, I thought that I was in a bright meadow surrounded by tall, bright figures speaking in high-pitched voices. And that lasted maybe 10 seconds, and that was very peaceful. It kind of felt like a dream a little bit, but it was not scary. I wasn't in pain or in fearing anything. And then I woke up. But during the cardiac arrest when I was 21, I don't remember anything for a few days. So I'm hoping that if there is any kind of spiritual connection to what I saw previously, that the reason I don't remember anything the second time is just because I don't remember anything for a few days. But obviously, you know, I've thought about it. Maybe it was just my brain releasing chemicals or some other kind of dreamlike state. But the second time, I did not, you know, have any kind of spiritual experience.
How did this change your outlook on life?
So at first, it didn't really. So at first, my outlook probably changed negatively. I was a little too scared to work out. I was scared to kind of live my life. I gained about 30 pounds. I wasn't into working out like I was previously. And I remember I was home at my parents' house in Columbus, probably 9 months to a year after my cardiac arrest. And I was going for a walk with my mom. And even just going for a walk kind of made me nervous. And I had to go around and go back home. And I said, "Mom, I'm too scared to do anything. I don't work out anymore. I'm unhealthy. I can't even go for this walk with you." And my mom's this little 4'10" Italian lady who just says it like it is. And she goes, "Michael, if that's the way you're going to live your life, you might as well have died." And at the time, I was like, man, that kind of hurts my feelings a little bit. But looking back on it, that was the best advice I've ever received. And ever since then, I was like, you know what, screw it. I need to get back into living my life, working out, going and doing things I like to do. And like, I rejoined a softball league. I used to play softball, like just adult men's softball before. I was too scared to do it after my cardiac arrest. But after my mom said that, I was like, you know what, I need to live my life to the fullest. And that's what I've been doing ever since. And that kind of has to do with my move here. I was telling you guys before this, I moved to New York from Columbus about 7 months ago. And before I say this, I also want to say Columbus is a great city. I have a lot of great things to say about it, but I think I probably would have been a little bit more complacent in what I was doing if it weren't for this whole experience. And now I just think I need to live my life to the fullest. I have a second chance. I mean, everyone, you only have one life and you got to do what you want to do with it and not waste it. So that's really kind of how it's changed my life.
So I'm fascinated to hear what it was like when you emerged from that 2 to 3 day stretch where you were bedridden and you were completely out of it. You don't remember anything during that time. Was that moment the first couple of days back? I mean, first of all, what happened the first day back? Mm. Did you want to call people? I'm sure everyone was panicked. What did your friends think? What did your family think? How did you feel then? Was it still terror? Was it relief?
Definitely, yeah. So the first thing I remember is watching Game 7. The Cavs were playing the Pacers in Game 7, and apparently that was the third time I watched it because I didn't remember that I watched it two times in the 2 days before that. So my dad recorded it for me. So that's the first thing I remember, and the Cavs won, so that was
right.
Next thing is the students who actually gave me CPR and used a defibrillator and saved my life came to the hospital, and I remember – and I'm generally kind of like not – I don't like – emote outwardly. I'm not a very emotional person, but I stood up and I gave them a hug and I cried and I was like, I don't know how to repay you guys. I mean, I wouldn't be here if it weren't for you.
Do you still talk to Corinne?
Yeah. So Karen David, I talked to her all the time. She actually came and taught a CPR class at my house in Columbus before I moved.
Wow.
My mom also didn't know how to thank them, so she bought them all gift cards, made them coffee mugs and shirts that said, "I saved Michael Colgan's life."
That's outstanding.
Yeah, it's a classic mom move.
Yeah. 4'10" Italian mom move.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So that's one of the first things I remember. And then I just remember I felt really grateful, first of all, for being alive. Second of all, my hospital room was just flooded with friends and family the entire time I was there. And I was just so grateful that people were there to support me. And I really, at the time, wasn't sure how it was going to affect my life. So, of course, I was definitely a little bit nervous. But the main feeling that I had was just overwhelming gratitude to be alive and for all my friends and family that were supporting me.
That's just an unbelievable, unbelievable story. Do you have any, who knows how many people see this? Do you have any advice for people who are going through, you know, health issues, any kind of thing right now? Obviously, there's a million people everywhere that feel like they need help in some way. Do you have any advice?
Yeah. It definitely would be within reason to try your very best to not live in fear or to not miss out on opportunities, obviously within reason, like I was doing for the first year or so. It's easier said than done, 100%, but you just need to live your life to the fullest as much as you can. And then also, I would say something else that was helpful for me, and I'm sure helpful for a lot of other people, is finding kind of a support group of people going through similar having similar issues to you. So for example, I was fortunate enough to get involved in the American Heart Association in Ohio, and I was the president of the Young Professionals Board for the American Heart Association. And through that, a couple things. First of all, I was able to meet other people who had the same thing as me happen and had the same device that I have and same experience. And that was really eye-opening, and just I felt really supported to meet other people in the same boat as me. And then also it was great to be able to give back as well and do a lot of volunteer work and really just try to find the silver lining in what happened.
Has it changed your religious or spirituality views?
It really hasn't. I think maybe if I were to have another, if I were to have had another spiritual experience like I did the first time that I had a seizure, maybe it would have. So it really hasn't though, I would say.
Do you work out in fear now? What's your working out habit like? You look fit. You look like you do work out. How are you mentally doing that?
Yeah. So it definitely was tough to get back into it, and I would be lying if I said I was never got nervous now. I'd always wear a Fitbit, and if my heart rate gets over, 185 or something really high, I'll generally kind of slow down a little bit. But again, I just kind of had to mentally push through it and force myself to do what I love doing, which is I love working out. I love fitness. So I would be nervous, or I would be lying if I said I never got nervous, but you kind of just have to get over that hump.
And in the period after you awoke, did you have any feelings like, oh my goodness, it was that close of an encounter with death, and you know, I should have asked that girl out, I should have done this. Did you have a feeling like, holy shit, I got to do the things I want to do?
Yeah, again, like right at first I didn't, just because I was so, first of all, I also started my first big boy job, my first real in-person job, right after college. I was so focused on that and so focused on just kind of like learning how to live adult life, especially with my health issues. So at first, no, but after a while, that's when I started thinking, man, I am so lucky to be here. You only get one life and you got to live it to the fullest. So it wasn't anything retrospective that I was thinking, I wish I did XYZ. It was more planning for the future and thinking I need to follow my dreams and do what I want to do.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
And that's just an unbelievable story.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing it. Really, really. I mean, I guess, you know, one thing that makes it unique is that you are not, you know, a lot of times when you hear these stories, you're like, well, you know, you had this diagnosis when you were young, you know, you were eight, like near death. It's a lot of times it's like your uncle who was 65 versus you. It's like this just shows the random, and you had a the randomness of it all.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And again, I mean, I feel like when things like that happen, you have to find the silver lining and learn from it, and open a lot of doors for me, like joining the American Heart Association. I never would have done that before, but that was a tremendous experience as well. So even though, you know, it's random, and at first I was like, oh, woe is me. Why did this happen to me? You got to definitely find the silver lining.
Well, thank you for sharing it with us. We're sure everyone's going to love hearing this, and awesome to meet you. And thank you for reading Roku News.
Yeah. And another lucky coincidence to add onto your list is, when you sent that, I was like, okay, let's do a Zoom. And you're like, I live in New York City. And we said, come on up, and here you are.
Oh, yeah, this is awesome. I appreciate you guys having me. You're doing a tremendous job. I know.
Thank you, dude.
Myself and all my friends in Columbus love reading you guys. I'm pumped to be here.
We got to get up to an Ohio State game this year.
Oh, yeah.
That's been a bucket list. What's your season prediction?
Oh, my God. I mean, they've got no excuse this year with all of the transfers they've gotten. They've kind of gutted the SEC, got a lot of Alabama guys, got
Caleb Downs.
Yeah. Julian Sand, I think, will be a great quarterback in the future. I think they really have no excuse. I think that they should at least be in the national championship.
Yeah.
I'm assuming they're going to play. It's an Ohio State view right there. They're just so stacked. They have no excuse this year. I'm thinking at least in the national championship, I think my prediction is Ohio State, Georgia, national championship. I know that's kind of unreal. Cookie cutter belief right now, but I think that's what it's
going to be. Judkins, Travion, what a backfield. Well, dude.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Thank you so much for coming in. This is amazing.
Thank you, man.
All right, dude.
Thanks, guys.
Holy shit.
That's just unbelievable.
You guys contemplating life today, dude.
Oh, I'm glad I can. I mean, it's like I when this happened, I didn't know what to do with myself for a little bit, but now I'm like, I gotta tell the story. And CPR awareness is a big thing that I at least focused on back in Columbus, and just getting people thinking about this.
But do you you still run, right?
Yeah.
Do you run in gyms, or do you run outside?
I do both. Yeah, I try to run outside. Like, they just opened FDR Drive up going up north, and I live on 14, so I just run up there. Nice. So like, I've been doing that recently. But if it's cold out, I run on treadmills. But I was really scared of treadmills for for a couple of years. Like, I could not. That was something I could not get over. I always joke I'm going to be a treadmill for Halloween, because that's the scariest thing I can think of.
Dude, that, like, I don't know how I would run again. That would just be so stuck in my head.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, definitely. If I didn't have my defibrillator, can kind of see it through my.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
So in the event that you had another cardiac arrest, that thing would kick in immediately?
Yeah, exactly. There's a wire that goes up here, and it like my heart's in the middle of it, so it like monitors my heart. So if it ever goes too high or too low, it'll just shock me. One of my buddies from the American Heart Association has the same device as me, and he's been erroneously shocked 3 times, and he said it's so painful. So I also was getting nervous about that for a while, but I've kind of gotten over that.
I mean, yeah. Well, thank you for sure. People are going to absolutely love hearing the story.
What a story.
It's insane.
Insane. I mean, I know this is a little tacky, but it really makes you think about bigger picture, instills you with the carpe diem spirit, because wow, just like that, it can be taken away.
Also, never smoking weed again.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, I like how honest he was too. I mean, I don't know, you know, just he was honest about everything.
Yeah. Thank you to Michael for coming on. What a great conversation. And now what?
So like in our app, and like we often do on The Story, we love trivia here. And we did a couple segments last time. One of them took off on TikTok, 1 million views on the 3 words that begin with DW. And you did pretty well in that one.
I did. I got 3 for 3 right. And for some reason, Dweeb did not.
Yeah, there was a lot of controversy about that. But guess what? We want to see if he can run it back. So I got a couple more trivia. You ready today?
Let's do it.
Here we go with number one. Can you name the 5 countries that end in the letter L? The 5 countries. And I'll count this as a W if you get 4 of them, because 5 would be wild.
Senegal.
Correct.
Man, this is tough. Okay, let me think.
He's locked in. This guy's channeling Davis Clark right now. You're going to hate this, but don't overthink it.
Portugal.
Portugal.
Senegal. Portugal.
Boom.
This is tough.
Can I say something?
Yeah.
I think you've been to all 3.
That remain. Nepal.
Boom.
Brazil.
Brazil, and you got 1 more. And I'll give you a hint. This country has been in the news quite a bit lately.
Israel.
There we go. 5 for 5. 5 countries that ended out.
Okay.
Not bad at all.
You gave me a hint in the last one.
Not bad at all. I got 1 more for you, okay?
All right, let's do it.
Can you name, without getting 1 wrong, the 5 most common consonants in the English language?
Do I have to do them in order? Or
no, you don't have to do them in order, but you just have to get – you can't get 1 that's not in the top 5.
Okay. S.
S is on in the top 5.
R.
R is in the top 5.
T.
T, you got your 1, 2, and 4. S is 4, which shocked me.
Really?
Yeah, shocked me.
What's 1?
R. You got 1, 2, and 4. R, T, blank, S, blank.
And that 5 is going to be tough.
Yeah, these are really, like, I mean, you know, they're not surprising, but it's also kind of a scrum after the top 2.
And if I get 1 wrong, I'm done.
And if you get 1 wrong, you're done. Like, out of a job.
M?
Nope.
Oh,
it's
really?
2 neighbors, L and N. Wait, L and N.
L?
Yeah, L and N.
L and N.
I couldn't believe it.
So over there you go. M.
Over M. Upset of the century. 2 maxes. We don't like
that. Yeah, I mean, I was thinking, am my mom?
And the last one today. Here we go. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Name the 5 languages with the most native speakers in the world and say a word from each language.
Okay. Native speakers.
And I think you're going to go to town on this because you are a polyglot.
I know a couple words. Okay. You know, first would be Chinese.
Correct.
Mandarin. 我是女孩. Okay, two.
Right, wow.
Spanish.
Spanish.
Yo hablo español.
Yo hablo español, bueno.
Puta madre. No. third. Native speakers.
Yeah, and you don't have to go in order here.
Hindi?
Hindi's four.
Then third would be English.
Third is English. Can you say a word from each?
English would be unbiased news.
Unbiased
and
news.
And Hindi would be...
You're going to say dweeb, but dweeb doesn't count.
Hindi would be namaste.
All right.
Aap kaise hain? How are you? And fifth would be native speakers. That's what makes it, because I would say French, but like I think a lot of people who speak French are not native speakers.
It's not French.
Arabic.
No, I was stunned. It's not Arabic.
Are you serious?
Stay in one of these countries that's been mentioned.
Bengali?
Boom. Well done.
Now, do I know? I don't think I know a single word in Bengali.
Really?
Yeah.
You will learn one. I've been to Calcutta. But listen, you are going to go to India soon. Is that correct?
That is right. 1 month from today, actually.
1 month from today. So maybe you come back.
Stay tuned, India.
Well, there you go with today's episode. Again, Michael, thank you so much for sharing your story. Fascinating. We'll see if his Ohio State prediction pans out. I'm a little skeptical. And that's the end of today's show.
Thank you all for tuning in.
Make sure you hit subscribe. See you next week. Let's do it.